The following is a true story, except for the ending, which just hasn't happened yet. This is Escape from Provo Canyon.
Months have passed since I was taken, and over a month since my escape. Things in Saratoga, you know, like, they've changed. Things like music and fashion, like the Police, you know, my favorite band, like they've broken up. Duran Duran, XTC, Blondie, David Bowie with the Zoot Suit. Like, where'd they all go? It's now it's like Billy Idol and like biker's leather, like channeling a Tom of Finland vibe or something. And there's this new starlet, Madonna. She has these three local disciples, these freshman besties. Like, you see them everywhere, you know, arm in arm, outfitted matching black lace and silver crosses. I don't know. For me, it's different, you know. I mean, it's cool. Back before my dad had the Grimace perform his, like, jowectomy, the girls, they wore, like, Bananarama overalls and, like, Esprit perm to toe. Smiley, happy-go-lucky. But now with like these three, you know, it's all glower and smolder. And I've noticed other changes too. Before, you know, like hitting the Cyclops, that was a group activity, something we all relished. But now it's like everyone's got their own Cyclops. And when I see my friends spark up a bowl, it's like, there's no ceremony. As before, it's like, ooh, let's smoke a bowl. Now, you know, like, I could tell, it's like, they've done it a million times. You know, moving across the periodic table of drugs, cocaine, mushrooms, like, that stuff was reserved for, like, grand occasion. Junior prom, so-and-so scored a bindle. Hey, let's all take mushrooms for Halloween. And now it's like, what the fuck's up with those two guys? Oh, dude, they're on acid. It's like, really? It's a Tuesday. And my tribe, my friends, like, I can tell a lot of them, they're no longer virgins. Back in the day, you know, the rumor mill used to spit out stories of, like, drunken hookup. But it was mostly making out, like, paws inside of clothes. But now it's, like, full-on boning. It's like fucking everyone's having sex. Me included.
Still don't know what I was waiting for.
So, yeah. I've changed, too. I've gone through my own transformation. I'm no longer that junior at Saratoga High, that drummer dude whose parties are legendary amongst the incoming freshmen, that piece of teenage wildlife. I've been disappeared into Hell's Ditch, fucking Provo Canyon, where I've risen up through the ranks from hopeless intake all the way to hotel, that's promise of movie night and pizza. For the chance to go back. To catch a buzz that has since changed its vibration. Leaving me searching. And so we enter the dog days of summer, yeah, it's back to school, and the scene at Sally's is starting to die down. Unlike me, you know, people have shit to do. Sally, she becomes my go-to hang. She becomes my girlfriend. And I was happy with that. I mean, I like Sally. She was really cool, and we had, like, a really good connection. You know, great talks. And I was attracted to her, and she was attracted to me. Was I worried that my friends would find out? Totally. Do some already know? Possibly. Imaginably. I start working with Sally. She's doing design production, but this is like way before desktop publishing. She had this machine that printed out graphics for like signs. I helped her hang one over this liquor store in this kind of seedy part of San Jose. I think I read something like cold beer here or beer and lotto. She paid me like $20, which was rad. And this is the first pocket money I've had in ages. Sally, she gave me a needed sense of independence from having to sponge off everybody all the time for beer and cloves. But $20 only buys you so many big gulps and jumbo jacks, and it's not long before, you know, I'm skint again. Back at the carbo halls, everything's cool. Nobody's complaining, but at the same time, like, I can sense I've been living there for a while now, you know? I mean, Hank's Tamales. Is that a bottomless plate? Probably. His generosity knows no bounds, but still, I was starting to feel like a leech, like a vagrant, and that was like a new, really shitty feeling. So added on top of that is the initial excitement of my escape, you know, my summertime soap opera. My ratings are waning. At first, it's like, Jow's back. Oh, he played a show, rad. And now, like, what else you got? Once everyone knows who shot JR, like, what's next? Everyone, it's like back to school, back to life, back to reality. And me, I'm the leech who shot JR. And, you know, one day, it all comes to a head. It's mid-afternoon, and Sally and I are, you know, we're laying in bed post-coital. And I'm just shrouded in, like, le petit mort, the little death. It's like a French saying for, like, orgasm, but also, like, when someone kind of dies inside. So anyways, we're laying there, and she can kind of tell I got something on my mind. She tries, like, playing with my balls, and I'm like, stop it, you know? And now she's feeling scorned. Like, why are you getting all squirrely on me? And I'm like, I'm not getting squirrely on you. And now we're having our, like, first fight. And this is new. This is weird. I don't know how to talk about it. I guess we're past just hooking up. Are we getting feelings for each other? Is that okay? Is any of this okay? And then it just starts pouring out of me. The kidnapping, Provo, the escape, the future, just all the stress, anxiety, and confusion just leaches out of my nervous system. Like all my friends, you know, they're getting ready to be seniors. That's their new identity. But what about me? You know, what am I doing? What am I? Like, who am I? And then all of a sudden, you know, she's like, okay, kiddo. And just her saying that, like calling me kiddo, it was like, yeah, she really is twice my age. And I am still just a kid. So yeah, I'm confronted with that yawning age gap between us. All of a sudden, she takes out a set of tarot cards. She's like, yeah, like, I'm gonna do a reading. I could try a Celtic cross. It's been a while. And I'm like, what's a Celtic cross? And apparently it's named after the formation of the cars, like five down, three across. And she tells me, this will help define the present and its immediate challenges or something. Now she's sitting Indian style on the bed. She's got the incense going and she's flipping cards. It's all this like freaky medieval imagery. One card has a guy hanging upside down with one leg twisted behind the other. Real paranoid shit. And then she flips over a card and we both freeze and she points. And it's death. And she whispers, like, her voice is all deep and mystic and she's not teasing. And she's like, the old Jow is dying. A new Jow is born. And I'm like, no, old Jow's not dead. Like, he's right here. What do you mean old Jow's dying? Dying is bad. I want good. And she's like, good and bad, you know, it's not for me to say. Only the cards will show what they mean. And I'm like, I want answers from a deck of cards. So what do you expect? But hey, dire straits, psychologically. So she flips over the last card and it's this tower. In it is this really cool knight. He's got a bitchin' suit of armor, looking all rad and like formidable. And she's like, it's Jow. I'm like, the new Jow. Okay. I'm like, he's rad. I try to grab the card, but like she swats my hand away. No touchy the cards. But anyways, I'm like, rad, I'm a knight. I got a gnarly sword and armor, maybe the new Jow. And she's like, yes, perhaps no. And then she points to the background. And off in the distance, there's these dudes on horseback, like a posse, approaching the tower. And she's like, Provo, the Grimace, he's getting close. And I'm like, oh yeah? And she's like, yeah. Very close. The Grimace, he's closing in on you. And I'm like, fuck, like, what do I do? And she's like, you gotta leave. I'm like, I gotta leave. And she's like, you gotta leave. You gotta run, 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 You know, looking back, maybe the tarot reading was Sally's way of letting me down easy. Maybe she was bored with me. Maybe she was worried that the word might get out that we were sleeping together. Who knows? Maybe she really did tap into something, you know, some gypsy arcana. Maybe the grimace really was closing in. Maybe her crystal ball wasn't so cloudy. Either way, you know, it got me thinking hard. Between school starting and me feeling like I'd stayed long enough at the Carba Halls, I knew it was time to move on. Now, I don't remember the particulars, but somehow I convinced Adam and Matt to do a trip down south. I think I promised Hank I'd get in touch with my mom, but in reality, this trip had about the same amount of planning as my escape with Matt. Destination unknown. Like, where are you headed? South. So early in the morning, we load up the beater Buick. I promised Barb that I'm going to dye the roots of my hair. Pat on the head for Benjamin. And, you know, Hank calls me aside. And he's like, look, if you get into any trouble, you call. You can always come right back here. And he, like, palms me a 50. It was like a very touching moment. And I can never repay him and Barb for what they did for me. No. So, like, later that afternoon, you know, we're cruising down the 101, like around the Gaviota Pass. It's like north of Santa Barbara. And the big blue Pacific line, like, sweeps into view. There's something, like, super soothing about gazing on the fucking, like, endless horizon. You know, like, possibilities. I'm driving. Actually, speeding. I don't know why. Last time I saw my driver's license was when the grimace shined a flashlight up my ass. When the red light flashes in the rearview mirror, I'm thinking, oh, fucking, this is it. I get pulled over, but amazingly, the cop's cool. You know, he lets me off with a warning as long as Matt takes over. A few minutes down the road, I spy a phone booth, and I'm like, hey, guys, let's pull over. Ring, ring. My mom picks up. I haven't talked to her since the show at Provo. Just hearing her voice, I start tearing up. And I'm like, Mom, it's Zhao. And at first she's caught off guard, and then she's asking me where I am. Am I okay? And, you know, I tell her I'm with Adam and Matt. We're up around Santa Barbara, and that we don't have anywhere to go. Can we come stay with you? And she was very upfront with me. She's like, Jeffrey, I don't have custody of you, and I can get into a lot of trouble if you come here. And so this is the first time it gets through, like, my fucking thick teenage skull that, dude, your little escape adventure, like, you're putting other people in jeopardy. You're putting your mom in jeopardy. And it was a tough one. And then it's her turn. For all the stress and worry, it just pours out of her. You know, she tells me, you know, with Wow and Bao gone, it was just you and me at the house. And, like, I didn't know how to handle you. You know, I tried to get you to go to school, but you just wouldn't. And now, like, feelings of shame for being so, like, self-centered, only thinking about myself and what I wanted, the fun that I was gonna have, which was fucking shallow, you know, easy, fun, good times with just my friends. Yeah, I was feeling like a total piece of shit. And it was right that I felt like a total piece of shit. And Mom being Mom, she can tell I'm hurting, and she comforts me, you know. She says, Jeffrey, you're a good person. With lots of good qualities, you know, you're smart, talented, loving. You can do anything you put your mind to. And I just know one day, you know, you're going to put it all together. And that just, like, slays me. Because she's right. You know, I'm not a piece of shit. Just because I've been a piece of shit doesn't mean I am one. I'm inherently, like, a good person. And I am smart and talented and loving. And I can put it all together when I put my mind to it. But still, the moment was not easy to bear. So I get back in the car, I'm thinking about all the shit I pulled and how I must have affected my mom, you know, the ramp, fucking Wolo, like, stealing wood from neighbors, I mean, really? Did she get calls for that? They must have been pissed. Me getting expelled, you know, her son, you know, Twain brain, like, how does that feel? Stupid bowling alley summits. For sure she'd rather be off hiking, you know, with Marvin instead of sitting in the back seat with her ex, my dad, you know, listening to he and I fight. Matt and Adam can tell I've just been through a heavy one. You know, Adam, he asks if I'm okay, and I'm like, yeah, it's cool. But he knows it's not cool. And so we sit there in the car for a little while. The sun begins to set. And Matt asked, like, where to? And I'm like, Irvine. A few hours later, Matt pulls into this sleepy cul-de-sac, you know, like track home development. We go up to a townhouse and ring the bell, and there is Steve Zamuson. He's my mom's tax guy who took me skiing. And there's his wife, Sheila. You know, Sheila's super cool. No talk of Provo or even my parents. And she's like, hey, nice to meet you, Adam. Nice to meet you, Matt. Turns out that they're on their way out to watch a movie. You know, Steve's been wanting to see it. It's got that guy from Taxi. What's its name? Romancing the Stone. It's supposed to be good. Anyways, we ordered you guys a pizza. Should be here in about 30 minutes. There's stuff to drink in the fridge, and they take off. And so I'm relieved. The trip south. It looks like things have worked out, at least for tonight. I open the fridge, and there's like a sixer of Heinekens, and I'm like, oh, yeah, you know? But Adam's like, dude, I don't know. Sheila said, make yourself at home. So we pop some Heinekens and, you know, I start like waxing philosophical, wrongly using album titles to describe the magic of, you know, hey man, if you just let go, the universe takes care of things, you know, synchronicity, man. Just complete bullshit, really. But, you know, Adam and I, we're digging it and we're riffing on the concept and the doorbell rings and we're like, pizza, you know, arms in the air, jubilation. I open the door and I'm like blinded, like a pair of military grade flashlights are just like in my eyes. A walkie talkie crackles and fucking all hell breaks loose. I just remember like a throng of men, like big men, like the offensive line for the 49ers just pushing in through the door. Me, I like reel backwards, I'm slammed to the ground and someone's kneeling on me, like pinning my arms behind my back. And then I hear it, Adam and Matt, this cry, you know, this like rebel yell, like fury mixed with fear. And I look up and it's fucking Adam and Matt rushing the cop. I hear the bodies like crash and grapple, but within like 15 seconds, like those rebel yells are now like rebel yelps. It was all over in a flash. I look up and two cops are handcuffing Adam and Matt. I feel a pair of handcuffs snapped around my wrist. I'm picked up off the floor. I lose my balance. It's hard to stand up with, you know, your hands cuffed behind your backs. And I sort of stumble forward and I remember my head like slumping into this large soft stomach. I gain my balance and I look and it's the large purple polo. It's the motherfucking Grimace. I just can't believe it. He's my ultimate boogeyman. Not like some psychological neurosis. No, the Grimace is really fucking real. His fleshy hand, I remember he had these fat, almost like swollen hands like Tom Cruise's guy in Tropical Thunder. The feeling of those fat hands pinning my arms behind my back and like pushing me out the door. It was just so fucking grossly familiar. I'd felt his fat hands on me before during the first kidnapping and at a few times at Provo. It was just fucking gross and it was scary. So outside, there's like three black and whites in the cul-de-sac and their lights are spinning, like reflecting off the townhouses. A few neighbors have come out. They're there in their pajama, like clutching pets on their little patches of green grass, watching the cops like lower Matt and Adam into the backseat. Watch your head. It's like one of those fucking cop shows, you know, bad boys, bad boys. The Grimace, like he throws me in the back of a rental and I remember as we pulled away and we're passing Adam and Matt in the backseat of the car, I got a really good look at them. And they just looked like busted. You know, and this is the first time I'm actually witnessing my actions negatively affecting others. My friends. Like because of this stupid escape. You know, will the Grimace be able to drag, like, Matt and Adam back to Provo with me? Are the cops going to go bust Hank and Barb? Are they coming for Sally? So, it's just me and the Grimace on our way back to Provo. No Cessna this time, we're driving. Somewhere on the 15 heading east, the Grimace pulls over at a gas station for a piss break. Inside the toilet, like, he stands right behind me and he's got, like, one of his, like, fat, grubby paws, like, right on my shoulder. You know, to make sure, like, you know, I don't somehow slip away. But there, you know, there's no need. I'm so freaked out I can't even piss straight. I mean, everything has come crashing down. You know, all the highs of being on the run. You know, like the wonderment, like, hey, what's gonna happen next? Like, all of that's gone. Because now I know. Now I know what's next. I know where I'm going. And it's just a fucking black hole. I wake up on the backseat of the rental car and I see the sun glowing up in the mountains. Not the Santa Cruz Mountains. These are the Rockies. The Grimace pulls into that wretched compound. My Siberian gulag. Past the baseball diamond where he skipped the batting line. Past the idiotic half pipe that busted my tooth. The Grimace pushes me inside that creep show hallway. And just like before, like on New Year's Eve, psychologically, I take like a massive breath. I'm going under, and who knows when I shall surface again. Keys jingling, walkie-talkies scratching, buzz of the halogens. You know, all these sights and sounds are just sensory overload in like a very, very bad way. The Grimace marches me through intake, through long-term, and then down that one hallway to Provo's like darkest dungeon, solitary. Now imagine a hallway that really leads to nowhere but a dead end, where there's two doors that open to two different padded cells, each about the size of an elevator. The Grimace tosses me in and closes the door, and I hear the lock turn. And that's it. You know, I just burst into tears. About an hour later, the Grimace brings me breakfast. Powdered eggs, purple juice, plastic cutlery on a bright blue tray. Takeout from Cafe Cynique. He waits to watch me eat, but I don't. That night I don't sleep. Like, I cannot. It's just me all alone with, like, bad thoughts. Like, fucking black and fucking bleak. And, like, I cry and I scream and I'm pounding on the walls and stomping on the floor until, like, I just can't anymore. And then a little ray of hope shines in. You know, and I try to snuggle up to it. You know, get warm. And I start telling myself, like all of this simply cannot be. And yet here I am, this padded cell, it does exist. I really am back in fucking Provo. The next night's worse. You know, the anguish, the despair, like all of that's gone. Emotionally, I'm like blank, like I feel nothing. And feeling nothing, that's the worst feeling of all. I'm all alone in a chair in a conference room, one that I've never seen before. The door opens and the Grimace walks in, followed by two men in like their late 40s, early 50s. Their names are Jack Williams and Robert Crist, founders and owners of Provo Canyon. These two are my judges because this is my trial. The morning is spent in discovery. Crist and Williams lead the Inquisition. the Grimace, he's really just the stenographer. And I find a super tiny sense of satisfaction watching the Grimace, you know, struggle to keep up with testimony, scribbling notes on a yellow legal pad, you know, effectively memorializing my exploits during my escape, which is ultimately his fault, his failure. And so no, the Grimace does not get to shine his flashlight up my ass. No, not today. Rather, these two do.
Let the meeting come to order. Let the record state that this is a behavioral debrief interview per PCS elopement protocol 7.3.1 for a 1, Jeffrey Wallace Folkerth, student ID 196. We have a confirmed elopement of number 196 and an authorized absence detected by the father at 8 a.m. July 5th, 1984, during home visit. Number 196 is confirmed AWOL for a duration of 73 days, a time during which we shall now ascertain whether 196 violated sections of the Policy and Procedures Manual. This includes, but is not limited to, theft, trespassing, contact with restricted individuals, substance use, or misrepresentation of identity.
"196, you will answer clearly, concisely, and without delay. Do you understand?"
"Open kimono."
"Excuse me?"
"Concise and clear."
"Answer in the affirmative or negative."
"Yes."
"During your time off campus, did you steal anything? Food, clothing, supplies, anything not yours?"
"No."
"Did you enter any property without permission? Abandoned buildings, private homes, commercial spaces?"
"No."
"Did you have any interaction with restricted individuals? Family not on your contact list, former peers, or individuals designated as therapeutic risks?"
"Yes."
"Who?"
"No."
"Names?"
"Affirmative." And here Discovery's paused to let the Grimace catch up. And what he does, he flips over a clean yellow sheet, you know, signaling he's ready. And it's time, once again, for me to firewalk across the periodic table of drugs.
"Tobacco."
"Yeah."
"Alcohol."
"Yes."
"Marijuana."
"Yeah."
"Cocaine."
"Nah."
"Barbiturates."
"No."
"Psychedelics, hallucinogens." "Sex."
"Huh?"
"196, did you have sex, yes or no?"
And at this point, like, I'm utterly confused. I mean, sure, like, love is the drug. I mean, at least according to Brian Ferry. But, like, a controlled substance? Like, I don't know. And what are these guys doing with the rule against sex? Like, it's an all-boys school. I mean, what is that? I mean, it can't be tolerance. Like, maybe foresight? Or what if the students are in love, you know? Does that make it okay?
196, answer the question.
You know, and now, you know, I'm sort of missing Sally. But, like, how do I miss her? I don't really know. And do I confess, you know, to losing my virginity to a woman twice my age? You know, like, what if she was my girlfriend? Was she? Is she still? One thing's for sure, like, there's no way I was gonna out Sally. Not to these two pricks. You know, they'd find a way, you know, to haul her away, you know, for statutory rape or some bullshit. You know, Sally did not rape me. Nothing of the sort, not even close. The only people doing the raping, you know, are the Grimace with his fucking flashlight and these two assholes. The founders of Provo Canyon. You know, raping my mom and dad of, like, their good and, like, loving intentions, you know? To protect me, you know? From the threats of, like, you know, a dangerous world. You know, the periodic table of drugs, you know? Myself. And these threats, you know, they're always, like, exaggerated and exploited by the professionals because it serves them. It serves them that these are threats that, you know, parents can't understand. Or simply don't have time to.
'96. Did you have sex?
No. It was something more. So we break for lunch, which I take back in my cell. An hour later, I'm brought back into the room where the Grimace reads back the transcripts. And yeah, I've pretty much broken every rule in the book, which is exactly what they throw at me. My sentence, an insane amount of ips, like 10,000 or something. And I quickly do the math in my head, and I'm like, hold on. I mean, and this is a weird moment, because before, I wouldn't dare to speak up, you know, like, talk back to the Grimace, and like, certainly not to the owners. But, you know, like, the prying into me and Sally, you know, it's got my back up. And I've been on the outside. You know, like, I've heard Sally, you know, manhandle the cops. So, yeah, you know. She's made it somehow easier to view the Grimace, Robert Crist, and Jack Williams, not as my warden and tribunal, but perhaps, you know, as like fumbling adults, like in a hurry to figure out, you know, what to do with a kid named Zhao. And so I speak up. I'm like, guys, you know, the amount of ips you've just given me, if I stood like 8 hours a day, 7 days a week, I'd be done around St. Patrick's Day in 1985, which is like 3 months after my birthday, you know, on January 16th, which is when I turn 18. And then I just stop because, like, I don't have to go on. Like, it's the math talking back, not me. So eventually my sentence gets commuted down to something like 3 weeks. And I start like my new job as a professional ipster, you know, like standing and staring at a wall for 8 hours a day. In structure, you know, hands behind the back, nose 3 inches away from that faux wood paneling and investment. Yeah, it's funny how you can get used to just about anything. Within a few days, I develop a sort of aptitude, you know, like a knack for escaping, like, deep within my own mind. And there are times when I'll just replay like an entire day of when I was out on the lam, you know, eloped, you know, me jumping out of the redwoods into Matt's beater Buick, you know, like me up at the grow patch, you know, tending bud, hitting the Cyclops, me taking off in that jam in the middle of tea in the Sahara, you know, all my friends singing along, and you know, that party at Sally's. Me with Sally. And I could almost like go into a meditation to the point where like, I'm not really there in investment, standing ips. Like psychologically, I'm like completely elsewhere. And I guess I'm lucky in that like, I've always had like what my mom would refer to as like a rich internal world. I don't know how else you call it. But yeah, you know, I'd escape, you know, into my own mind. And there were days that after 8 hours, like, I'd almost rather just keep standing. So yeah, for 3 weeks straight, you know, I stood and stared at a wall. Until one day I was done. Now, although I've stood my ips, like, I'm still like a long-term loser. Like, there's no penance that'll get me moved out to Unit 1 again. Like, you know, no hope of rising up through the ranks. Long-term is like the Mark Twain of Provo, you know? It's like the antipode of hotel with its, like, you know, movie nights and pizza parties. Like, hotel's the zenith, which makes long-term, like, the nadir. You know, there are no pleasures, you know, diversions, you know, nothing to look forward to, nothing to do. No slopes to love. And the kids of long-term, like, they're just the fucking dregs of Provo society. You know, my new peer group. And I don't really know these kids, but to my surprise, they know me. As opposed to on the outside in Saratoga during the dog days of summer when my ratings are slumping, like, on the inside, like, I'm up. You know, all the while, back in long term, you know, the rumor mill's been churning out lore, you know? You think the Grimace always gets his guy? Well, there's a guy. Like, one guy. A guy named Zhao. You know, who actually made it out. And he's still out. Ah, shit, though. And now he's back. Fucking Grimace. But hey, you know, hell of a run. And so, now that I'm back, I've become sort of living proof, you know, that things are possible. You know, the Grimace and his goons, you know, they're not like ironclad jailers. I've exposed, like, chinks in their armor, you know. The Grimace, you know, he always had this mythology of, like, invincibility. And, like, I've co-opted a bit of that. And now I have my own mythology. 2 weeks, and that evening, I'm allowed to go to snacks. And, you know, lining up at the kiosk, I'm thinking, okay, you know, this is pointless. Like there's no way my dad has sent me anything. Like, what, for the grand delinquent, you know? All privileges and passes, like, revoked. You know, it's kind of hard to hit the books when you've eloped with the Cyclops. No hitting the books, no hitting the drums. You know, I wonder if they're even still set up there in the auditorium. But yeah, and certainly no snack money. So I get up to the front of the line, and who's working the kiosk? It's Tommy. Turns out since my grand escape, like, he's gone hotel, which is unbelievable. And suddenly I have this massive, like, moral hangover. It's like, I could be Tommy. I could be hotel. But I threw it all away. Like, I just had to. I couldn't help myself. So anyways, Tommy's like, you know, hey, what do you want? And I'm like, dude, you know I can't afford anything. And I mean, like, sending me to snacks knowing damn well I have nothing in my account, like, that's, like, on brand for Provo. But Tommy, he's like, you know, hey, man, like, you can have whatever you want. And I'm like, yeah, okay, man, stop fucking with me. And Tommy's like, no, seriously, check it out. And to my surprise, I had this huge balance. It turns out, you know, Dad dropped a huge bonus on my account as a reward for going hotel. And in an instant, like, I'm turning into the fucking Count of Monte Cristo. Like, I may be Provo's newest Twain brain, but I have currency. Thank you.
Next time on Escape from Provo Canyon.
So the guy, he opens the door. And in that instance, like, I like shapeshift.